Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Friday, May 16th, 2025. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Warid Ahmed, and we have a great show for you today. Firstly, we're going to be discussing how the U.S. and the UAE have signed a partnership to build the largest data center complex outside of the U.S. Secondly, Emirates is currently in talks with SpaceX to bring Starlink Wi-Fi on board to its fleet. And thirdly, UAE and Jordan have signed a SEPA that is set to boost bilateral trade between them to $8 billion by 2032. And finally, this is extremely big news. Etihad rail passenger service is to launch in 2026.
And first story first, Mr. Trump, third day yesterday, and today is his last day in the evening. Around evening, he will leave the Gulf finally after 3.5 days of billions and trillions of deals. But on the third day of his trip, when he came to UAE from Qatar, the UAE has signed a groundbreaking deal with the US to build the world's largest artificial intelligence campus outside America. Announced during Donald Trump's visit to Abu Dhabi, the deal marks a major shift in US export policy.
So the new AI campus will span 10 square miles in Abu Dhabi with a projected capacity of 5 gigawatts, enough to support up to 2.5 million of NVIDIA's top-tier AI chips. Now, NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang and Mubadala CEO Khaldun Al-Mubarak attended the signing.
And under the agreement, U.S. companies will operate the data centers and manage cloud services regionally. It also includes commitments by the UAE to align national security protocols with U.S. standards to prevent tech diversion.
The UAE could import up to 500,000 advanced NVIDIA chips annually, starting in 2025, sources have told Reuters. Now, these chips were previously restricted under the Biden-era export rules due to concerns over Chinese access.
And the Trump administration reversed those limits, signaling greater trust in the UAE. Trump's AI czar, David Sachs, said earlier this week that Biden's export controls were never meant to target allies and strategic partners.
AI was really a key focus during His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed's Washington visit in Biden's final days. Now, UAE-linked firms G42 and MGX have invested in OpenAI and Elon Musk's xAI, and Microsoft also invested $1.5 billion in G42 last year.
It was one of the most interesting days of the three-day trip that we saw today. The trip also starts soon enough. Mr. Trump will go to Qasr al-Watan, the presidential palace. He will go there. From there, he's going to Abrahamic houses. It's a very interesting trip that he's having in the UAE specifically, because in Saudi Arabia, we saw he didn't go to any monumental places. It was all business, US-Saudi forum, then GCC-Saudi forum, then lifting the sanctions. With UAE, it's very interesting that he's going to cultural landmarks as well. Even in Qatar, he didn't go to any place.
Oh, wow.
Yesterday, he went to the Sheikh Zayed Grand
Mosque.
Yeah,
he is definitely spending a longer time here. Imagine, you know what I also noticed? What we saw with Donald Trump's visit to Saudi Arabia, with his visit to Qatar, is that there was this like entire event of, you know, him and people standing in a line to greet him. That did not exactly happen in the UAE.
Yeah.
It seemed almost very private, and that it was, you know, most of the royals meeting with Donald Trump, and then you have Jensen Huang there, and you have Elon Musk, and of course, the man himself, Donald Trump. But it seemed very private. It seemed almost very secretive. Yeah. It did not include as much people as there were with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, or, you know, Qatari Amir.
Yeah.
Like, I just found that really interesting, and I think the reason for this is because of the fact that the UAE has already signed a partnership to invest $1.4 trillion over this decade into the U.S. The White House published a statement saying that Trump's current visit, it was 200, was it billion or million in deals?
So what's happening is that yesterday was a very private event, but today the itinerary like just came out. And he's going for a business breakfast today. So all the people he couldn't meet yesterday, now he'll meet today for breakfast. And then today we'll see most probably him shaking hands with, again, 100 people. I think the most difficult part I've realized in the last 3 days for a president or the head of state is shaking so many hands and then smiling all the time and then remembering who he's meeting. The business breakfast is most probably started or taking place right now. We'll give you updates on our social media. But so there they'll meet. Apart from the $1.4 trillion that the UAE signed, that was a UAE commitment to US. $200 billion of deal are also announced by White House. The UAE hasn't announced them still, but they're going to be like, you remember we talked about how Saudi Arabia, it wasn't Saudi Arabia giving $6 billion. It was companies in Saudi Arabia, so vice versa transactions. That's how this next $200 billion is going to be. It's going to be some businesses in the UAE, UAE-born or led by UAE people, who will invest in U.S. businesses and U.S. businesses investing. Mm. So it's going to be a $200 billion transaction.
And Majid, you know what's something that I just observed? So basically Trump's AI czar, David Sachs, the first in American history, he was actually in the UAE, I believe, even before Donald Trump arrived, because His Highness Sheikh Tahnoon posted on X, him and David Sachs meeting. And I think that in this case, when we're discussing the UAE, we have to discuss His Highness Sheikh Tahnoon, and we have to give credit where it's due, because I believe that he really did play a monumental role in America easing its sanctions in providing the UAE with NVIDIA AI chips, and the first deal that actually signified that the relationship with the US, with the UAE, it's getting better, they're getting closer, it was the one with Microsoft. Because, you know, for the longest time ever, His Highness Sheikh Tahnoon and all the, you know, companies that he chairs, MGX, Mubadala, they all worked with China. And that first deal to basically ease them out of that process, it was Mubadala's $1.5 billion deal with Microsoft. So I think that was like, that truly was a historical moment, because it led us to where we are today.
The funny thing is, I was just talking to one of our commercial people, Omar, outside, and he was like, oh, it's all Trump on our timeline. I was like, yeah, it's a historic visit. It's like the biggest story. Even like if people had announcements at this time, they're not announcing it. But we went to this point and we talked about Microsoft. Microsoft is doing so much in this region, $1.5 billion last year with us. Then they are training UAE government employees, Saudi government employees. There's so many initiatives that they've taken here. But recently, like 2 days or 3 days ago, they announced that they're firing 3% of their staff globally. And that's about, I think, 6,000 people. So it's not just that all, it's a rose garden out there from Microsoft. I think one of the reasons when I saw the list of people, like which departments or what, it was mostly developers and coders and all those people who actually build softwares. And I think them investing into AI, it's a chunk of money that they're taking from firing these people and investing into AI, because a lot of the jobs that we talk about that, oh, AI will take our jobs, they are actually now, in hindsight, being taken away from people whose work actually can be 100% done by AI. So a coding guy who only does coding, now AI can do better coding than him with lesser bugs.
That's really unfortunate, though, you know, Majid. So I think
it's unfortunate, but quoting Jensen Huang, quoting Elon Musk, quoting every AI person right now in the world who has a big AI firm or AI initiative, all of them have time and again said that if you don't grow up and if you don't upskill yourself with AI, you will lose your job. And I think this story, Microsoft specifically,
no,
I'm mentioning it.
I don't think we can put it that simply, because I think in the end of the day, when it comes to job reductions, Majid, it all really does depend on company policy. It does, and I'll tell you why. For example, like companies like Porsche.
Yeah.
By the way, for them to like even hire someone new, someone who has been in the company for like a while has to actually leave.
Yeah.
Like they have to leave. They don't overhire. They don't hire easily. So it really does depend on company policies. I think, you know, of course, it's great. It's great that AI is advancing. Yeah. It's great that, you know, it can do such things like just make code and, you know, these people don't have to be used. But in the end of the day, I think, and we have to have that empathy there, because they lost
their jobs. Very simple question. You're Microsoft's head. You're the CEO. There's 1,000 people. They code. and now you only need one software which can do all their jobs. Okay, you'll keep them, but why?
See,
there is no reason to keep them because 100% of their job.
I understand what Microsoft is thinking there, but I'm you know, that's why I'm one of those people. I like to be good at a bunch of things because I don't want to be in a situation like that. I just mean it in the sense of these things usually happen where people get laid off because of company policy. Like, there are certain companies, by the way, they don't hire that many people so that they don't have to have job reductions like that. But I've noticed with these tech companies, especially with consultancy companies, they hire a lot of people.
Yeah.
And just as quickly as these people get hired, they also get fired.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's either redundancy. Yeah. And it's honestly really unfortunate.
I would say it depends on the nature of the job that you're doing. So if you're in a consultancy, it's a very human creative process. With coding and with all this stuff, it's a very machine process.
Mm.
So if I am a coder, if I'm coding on C++, Python, any language that you can pick right now, if I'm writing a code using that language, I know the language, it's good. But an AI software can write a code better than me. The only part where I come in as a human is if I create something new, if I want to create a new tool. So if I want to create a new tool, I know how to use that language to create a new tool, a new Microsoft, a new something. But after that, the whole job can be done by AI. So I'm not supporting them firing 6,000. The idea is that we have started seeing the change.
Yeah, and AI is advancing.
It is there. Ahmed Sajwani, the Mac, Hussein Sajwani's son, and Amira Sajwani's brother.
And the managing director of Damac.
Yeah, so he said a very interesting thing, that don't just fire people right now, because he runs a company where sales is the most important, I think, part, because they build projects and someone needs to sell them for them to make money. He said a very interesting thing, that don't fire people just right now. Look at the AI, work both of them together and see how they do over a longer period, like at least 1 or 2 years. And if somehow AI outperforms them, then obviously it's a very redundant role, you can remove them. But don't just take a rash decision and just go all in into AI and be like, okay, this person, remove it, make AI. Because to be honest, right now, there's so many softwares in the world which can make calls for you. Sales calls, outbound calls, they can take inbound calls. People have developed all these softwares, and to be honest, they are starting to make ripples and people are using them. So basically, the term behind it is agentic AI. We talked about it. Remember, like, it can do anything for you. You just have to tell it what to do. It'll do the bookings and everything. So agentic AI has advanced so much. One more example. Morning, I was looking at a property finder post on social media. Instagram, actually, I was scrolling through it. Your and my job is in danger also. How? You see that podcast, it's called the Teeny Tenant podcast. They literally have put a baby in a chair and he's talking. I don't know if I can quickly open it up. Property Finder, go to there. And he's talking to the monster under his bed. Now, to be honest, if I'm an outlooker, I'm the audience actually, I would be very interested to have listen to that chat. Because it's a kid talking to a monster under his bed about how the kid is moving to a new house. And the monster is like, I will join you there.
I see what
it's
you mean.
It's a really funny conversation. And it looks AI. Obviously, it looks AI. But you have to understand that at the end of the day, the content matters. The faces don't. My face doesn't matter. Your face doesn't matter.
You underestimate how people want to get attached to things. And people, you underestimate that.
I'm just saying, see, eventually, we've seen a lot of deep fakes and all that, and people have started believing that, oh, this is a real video and this is a false video. Even now, to be honest, if you see, for example, I'll give you a very small example. I was just observing it on our team's group. There was a video of Mohamed Salah at some infinity pool with a few teammates. We had to verify it. Why? There's not only just like, okay, normal verification or journalistic verification that it happened. There's also deepfake now. To be honest, with every video which is in low quality and shot from a distance and has a little blur in it, and you can see the guy, you know it's 100% Mo Salah. But now with deepfake, you have to do an extra check on it. Because anyone can make a deepfake of that kind. So guesswork has gone out of the window. For example, as a journalist, the very first thing that you're taught is always double-check your story. So if AP reports it, Associated Press, Reuters reports it, Bloomberg reports it, just try to find another person. Usually what happens is, if it's an exclusive, another big organization will quote them, like Reuters and Bloomberg, they always do that. Oh, Bloomberg reported and Reuters reported. So that's your second check. Or if you have an inside source, go to them. Always double check. In this age, I would suggest do a triple check. Even they are wrong sometimes. And we saw that with tariffs also.
But see, Majid, like when I brought up that point of, you know, it's all on company policy, I mean it in the sense of like, I'm speaking to the smashy business listeners right now. When you guys are applying to a new job, I know that many people are in very desperate situations. Make sure to actually see the company policy. You know, check LinkedIn, you know, check all these like different...
Glassdoor.
Exactly. Check all of these locations. And trust me, you will find out if they fire people quickly.
Yeah.
If they find that people are redundant very quickly. It is a company policy thing. Like, I'll tell you a company that I really admire because of something that they did. I think Ben and Jerry's, they're so smart, by the way, because in 2000, when they were acquired fully by Unilever, you know that they made sure that the deal had certain clauses to preserve their social mission.
Yeah.
They made sure to agree with Unilever that we don't want job cuts.
Yeah.
We don't want job cuts. So that's why, for me, I see that it is in company policy. Like, of course, if you're not going to be careful when you're hiring and you're overhiring people, those people are going to lose their jobs just as quickly. Because now with AI, like Majid, as you said, you can use it in journalism, you can use it in coding, quite literally in every single industry. So companies now, they play a role too in that they have to be ethical. And, you know, you can't give something as quickly as you take it back. That's wrong.
To be honest, I'll tell you.
It is ethically, wrong. Morally, correct.
Ethically, morally, it's completely wrong. Business-wise, it's not. It's just how businesses work. See, for example, we have 110 people. I always give my example because we're very open about our financials.
Even we're not listed. I think even businesses have karma, Majid. I haven't run
a business. I ran it for like 1.5 years in Pakistan. Never ran it beyond that. So I never became a big business to see if karma will kick back. But to be honest, let's ask Rich that question someday. It's a very interesting question. Does business have karma also? But main point, 110 people we have right now in Augustus Media. Someday there comes some AI, like chatbots. We have ChatGPT came November 2022, changed the whole landscape. In like 2 years, we've seen hundreds of millions of people losing their jobs. Not because they were useless or redundant. They didn't want to upskill themselves. So 110 people, if there is a software which can do what we do, and it does it very nicely, and we know it will, because AGI is not a distance possibility. Average general intelligence is very near. Sam Altman says it, Musk says it. All these guys say, always talk about AGI, because it's their next frontier. Whoever reaches there first will be the winner in the AI race. So they're trying their best to go to AGI. As soon as that comes, to be honest, this 110 people job could be easily done by 20, 30 people, and you'll need just decision makers then. You won't need tool operators or skill-based people, because that same skill with all the different variations of that skill, like an editing guy or some guy, a software would be able to do it very quickly. It's not a doomsday call, to be honest. It's just that you have to... Again, word pointed out very nicely to the listeners. We went live on Insta today as well, so I think worst case scenario, we'll see some comments if we're getting some. But the thing is that you have to upskill yourself. And it's not just AI. You look at the history of businesses. There was a time when everyone was in an agrarian society. Everyone was doing farming. But then came the Industrial Revolution, and if you couldn't build the wheel, you would not advance. So Industrial Revolution was one. Then content creation, to be honest, right? A lot of people of my age still have this FOMO and this regret that we didn't start with content when the time was ripe and there were less people in content
creation.
And this
is why I love Khalaf Al-Habtour.
Yeah.
Now, if you take a look at the Al-Habtour Group founder and chairman, he is on
just
social media all the time. By the way, I think he deserves an influencer award.
Yeah.
He's on Twitter, he's on Instagram.
He has a nice social media team. You have to realize.
Yeah, you're saying social media team, but at the same time, Majid, when you read the actual X posts, no, that sounds to me like
exactly
Khalaf
like
Al-Habtour is waking up and writing it. Because by the way, he doesn't just give his business thoughts, his political thoughts. From the morning on X, he's telling all of us, have a good morning.
Yeah.
You know, he's
always
sends
a dua in the morning.
Yeah, he's sending a dua in the morning. I think this is truly one of my favorite business influencers. To me, he is on his game. He is 70 years old, and he is keeping up with the times. But just to jump to our second story today, sorry that took a bit of a while. So Emirates, the world's largest international airline, it was just announced recently, actually, that it is also one of the best and making the most income in the world, is in advanced discussions with Elon Musk's SpaceX to potentially roll out Starlink satellite internet across its fleet. Now, the proposed agreement could see Starlink's high-speed satellite connectivity installed on nearly 250 Emirates wide-body aircrafts, including Boeing's 777s and Airbus's A350s.
Sources familiar with the matter told Bloomberg that Emirates is weighing whether to offer Starlink Wi-Fi free of charge for all passengers or restrict access to premium cabins and loyalty tier flyers. If finalized, this would mark a major leap in the airline's in-flight connectivity offering, especially for long-haul travelers.
And an endorsement from Emirates would be a huge win for Starlink Aviation, given the airline's global reach and reputation for luxury service. However, key hurdles remain. Starlink is not yet certified for the Airbus A380, Emirates' flagship jet, and it currently lacks coverage over Chinese and Russian airspace.
And the UAE has also not granted regulatory approval for Starlink services within the country, which could delay any formal rollout. Despite this, discussions are progressing, with Emirates exploring flexible pricing models such as monthly seat-based rates and long-term agreements.
And approval for Starlink on Airbus A350s is expected in the coming weeks. That would support the internet rollout on Emirates' newest delivery. Still, the airline may consider competitors like Viasat, already adopted by Qatar Airways and the upcoming Riyadh Air.
And regional adoption of Starlink could accelerate following Elon Musk's announcement this week that Saudi Arabia has approved Starlink Aviation only for maritime purposes, maritime and another purpose, not for general consumer use. And UAE authorization may follow soon, especially with U.S. President Donald Trump in UAE in Abu Dhabi.
I think with this story, really, Emirates Airline does not need Elon Musk. Elon Musk, in this case, does need Emirates Airlines because they're making the most revenue in the world. You know, it's the best airline in the world. Yeah. I think in this case, it would be a win if Starlink can get on Emirates Airlines. And Starlink, by the way, has already gotten on Qatar Airways. So Qatar Airways is the first airline in the world to use its satellite internet services. Yeah. And it's currently in Yemen, Jordan, and Oman.
Yeah. So Starlink in the airplane, completely true worth on Qatar Airways. And they are planning to equip all their planes by 2027 or 2026 with Starlink Wi-Fi. Mm. The good thing is that right now it's going to be free, but eventually I think they will come up with packages, 1 hour, 2 hour, or speed packages. Interesting thing is that Emirates, if somehow they agree to it and everything falls into the right place, the thing that we talked about is that they are still thinking of giving it as a free service or a paid service to business users. So I think for now it will be free, because when you look at these airlines, they are the biggest giants in the world. They can afford it. Mm. But the problem with Starlink is you need every plane retrofitted, properly fitted with the whole structure. So doing that costs money. Mm. I don't think Elon Musk will foot that bill. So eventually Emirates and Qatar Airways are footing that bill. But I think at the end of the day, they will somehow take it and use it as a USP. So Starlink got it. I think one of the Australian airlines has agreed. They haven't installed it, but they have agreed. I completely forgot the name. But yeah, the second one was Australian. But now Emirates will become the third in the world to have Starlink. So soon enough, you'll have very, very good internet on planes. Right now, the internet that I've seen, it's very bad for streaming. But it's good enough for sending messages and talking to your family. Oh, I'm in the plane, 2 hours left, etc.
Yeah, and heading to our third topic today, this one is really big. So the Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement, or otherwise known as CEPA, between the UAE and Jordan was announced and has officially taken effect. Now, this deal aims to strengthen trade ties and is expected to increase bilateral trade to more than $8 billion by 2032 between the two nations.
And the UAE's ninth SEPA, when it was signed, originally it was signed last October 2024, will reduce tariffs, eliminate trade barriers, and improve market access between the two countries. Dr. Thani Al-Ziyoudi, the Minister of State for Foreign Trade, called it a new era of collaboration that will promote shared growth and prosperity.
Now, SEPA is already signed with countries like Colombia and Australia, and India have boosted the UAE's non-oil trade by 42%, contributing over $36 billion, according to His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid. Now, last year, the UAE's non-oil foreign trade hit a record 3 trillion dirhams, or about $817 billion.
The SEPA with Jordan complements other agreements, including a $2.3 billion railway project linking Aqaba port to key mining areas. This is part of a broader $5.5 billion investment package agreed during King Abdullah II's 2023 visit to Abu Dhabi.
And both nations plan to collaborate in energies like infrastructure, transport, and finance. The UAE also aims to benefit from Jordan's industrial strengths, especially in phosphate, textiles, and pharmaceuticals.
And Jordan's economy remains stable despite regional challenges, with forecasts for growth around 2.1 to 2.7% in 2025, depending on regional security and tourism recovery. The UAE continues as Jordan's largest foreign investor and fifth largest trading partner globally.
Firstly, with the story, I have two observations, Majid. Number one, by the way, Jordan's population is filled with a lot of doctors and professors. I've never seen a population where so many people have PhDs and are all teaching professors. And my second observation is this, is have you noticed something? Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and Saudi Arabia are closer to Syria. And in this case, what we're seeing is that the UAE is closer in bonds with Jordan. Yeah. I'm noticing that. And I think especially when you actually think about the geographic map here in the Middle East, I think that this is very complementary. I think it's very great. You need these relationships. And, you know, obviously, Majid, like, we've been looking at Trump's visit in such a business lens, and that is the lens that we cover. But, you know, there is also something politically underway here between all of these countries. It's the fact that so much is happening. You know, we have an upcoming, I don't know if it's currently happening, but a tariff war. And then you can see what's happening between different nations. And it's really important to make sure that you're building these bonds. It's really important that, you know, that the Gulf has built $1 trillion bonds with the U.S. I think it's very important. It definitely does back them in that, like, geographic sphere.
For me, very interestingly, when you look at all of this, very good point that Saudi is very Syrian right now. Oh, Syria. Qatar has
been
supporting.
Even Qatar is, yeah.
But I think it's because they've chosen their partners on the basis of that, okay, Saudi Arabia cannot help literally everyone because they have their own country to take care of as well. Mm. So they chose that side, and UAE was like, okay, we'll choose this side. And eventually, as a whole, the whole region will become better. So yeah, Jordan. We also hosted the Syrian president. Our president, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed, said that we'll go to the lengths to help Syria recover. But I think it's a very good, nice mixture of them dividing the countries which are in trouble. And over Gaza, everyone is on the same page and everyone is on their side. But Jordan, Syria, Lebanon to an extent, it's being divided very strategically between these big countries, big economies. So no one country gets all the burden. So very nice to see. It's very nice brotherhood thing, I think. Next story. A lot of good news for people who want to travel from Dubai to Abu Dhabi to Sharjah without the traffic and everything. A delegation from Etihad Rail, led by CEO Shadi Malik, briefed Sheikh Hamdan bin Zayed Al Nahyan on the project's progress during a meeting at Al Dhana Palace. The update focused on the latest developments of the UAE National Railway Network, with a particular emphasis on the passenger service.
Etihad Rail described the initiative as one of the country's largest strategic transportation projects, showcasing the leadership's continued support for national infrastructure development. Now, the passenger line is expected to reshape the way people travel across the UAE.
And the highlight of the project is a high-speed train that will link Abu Dhabi and Dubai in just 30 minutes. Trains are expected to reach speeds of up to 350 kilometers per hour and pass through key destinations and tourist sites.
And the service will offer a fast, efficient, and environmentally friendly alternative to road travel, improving quality of life for citizens, residents, and tourists. It also aims to strengthen socioeconomic ties between the Emirates.
Completely forgot the start of the story, but Etihad Rail basically has confirmed that its much anticipated passenger train service will begin operations in 2026, and this is what we're talking about. And the high-speed train is projected to contribute 145 billion dirhams to the UAE's GDP over the next 50 years. Mm. Tender processes and design approvals are already underway, with further development phases to follow in the coming years.
I think this is so big because we're getting a train.
We're talking about air taxis always, but now finally, the Etihad Rail is also going to start passenger services.
And especially, I think, especially with the UAE, where you know that for them, everything is about luxury.
Yeah.
You know that this train is probably going to have different cabins.
Yeah, it has a business class.
So, exactly. Yeah. So, that's really exciting for everyone. And, yeah. You know, imagine, like, when I think of these trains, like, I'm thinking of my country, Sudan, and, like, our country... you know, there was a time there it was extremely developed and it had trains like this and we had all of these things. Not anymore, but, you know,
There was a lot of infrastructure which was damaged and destroyed, right, through the war.
But anyways, that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
This is the Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.6 million monthly listeners across all our platforms. You make this possible. If you're one of them, we appreciate you. Thank you so much. Take care. See you on Monday.
Bye-bye. Have a lovely weekend.